It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna. Yeah!
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the final draft edition of Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast. 10 picks are in for the Buffalo Bills. 7 picks today, Ryan. It was an absolute marathon, and we have so much to get into for this draft class. We are going to give our grade for this entire draft class, how this thing is sitting with us. Reactions to each of the picks and what it means for position groups and potential training camp battles. And then we'll kind of take our first peek ahead at what the Bills have left to do at this roster. We'll also take a quick spin. There's been a lot of, I know you wanted to wait till tomorrow on these UDFAs. There's been a ton of them already kind of coming out here in terms of what the Bills are adding. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, Matt. An eventful day. You know, we sat there and we said the Bills have so many fifth-round picks. Will they trade some of them, move up, and get some fourth-round targets? It really didn't happen that way. They stayed put for a lot of their picks. So I will say they addressed a lot of their needs. I'm not sure that the fan base is overall thrilled, or I think some are happy with it, but there's a lot that I've seen on social media, in my comments at least, that are not overall pleased with this draft class.
Yeah, and I want to get into all the little pieces of that. Like, what would you say is the most overarching complaint? For me, it's probably been going just one hit at wide receiver in this draft out of 10 picks. People are really upset with that.
The lack of a double dip at wide receiver is definitely what I'm seeing the most on social media.
Right. So let's start there. 716 Sports Blizzard, welcome in to the live show. This is live. We are absolutely live. I should have brought my microphone to the stadium. I could have done it from there, but fine. So the Bills go one wide receiver. I've advocated for two wide receivers this whole time. And, you know, the problem when you're in the situation that you're in with the Bills are in, which they brought in Mac Hollins, they brought in Curtis Samuel, they have Khalil Shakir, Justin Shorter, and Tyrell Shavers and KJ Hamler. Brandon B mentioned all three of those guys. Shavers, a UDFA last year that obviously they like a lot, because that's one of the first things he mentioned when I asked why not double dip at wide receiver. You know, if you take somebody on day three and there's not a clear path to a roster spot for that player, and you think that maybe if you take a center or if you take a tackle or if you take a running back, there might be a more clear path to a role or to a roster spot, I understand why Brandon maybe kind of dipped things back. And maybe depending on where they were picking, they weren't as high on the wide receiver at certain spots. But I then think that begs the question, did the Bills need to be a little bit more aggressive to go get maybe a second wide receiver that they feel is an upgrade? Are they not creating the kind of competition in that wide receiver room that they're so hell-bent on doing every single year? It's what I think Brandon Bean strives for when every offseason begins.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, one thing I've also seen, Matt, is some fans complaining we still don't have a number one wide receiver after taking Keon Coleman. And I get it. Keon Coleman, we talked about him yesterday. We don't know exactly what his rookie stat line will be. Some were very high in him, some were low, but you're not going to get a number one wide receiver, at least in terms of draft stock and people rated above Keon Coleman on day three of this draft class. So when it came to double dipping, a lot of the guys that I thought were potential fits for this Bills team went off the board pretty quickly. Troy Franklin opening up day three went off the board. Then you had Javon Baker go to the Patriots. You had Devontae Walker, who the Bills did a lot of work on, it felt like, go around pick. I think it was 113. So you had like back-to-back-to-back picks of targets that the Bills potentially could have taken before they could even get on the clock. So at that point, you kind of sat there and you said, either they're going to reach for a receiver or they can go and address some needs. And the first pick of day three was running back. So I think that's another reason why some fans weren't overly thrilled. Unbelievable story. We'll get to him in a little while. But I just feel like no matter what the draft class is, what the year is, how well you think some of these players are going to be, no one will ever truly be, no fan base will 100% truly be happy with the draft shortly after it's been taking place.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's some comments in here about the Bills didn't really have a flashy draft. Like last year, remember when Dalton Kincaid's name got called? That was a super flashy pick because they traded up a couple spots. You had Daniel Jeremiah on the broadcast saying the NFL better be ready for what they just allowed to happen. Right. So now if you're a fan watching that, you're like, oh my gosh, this offense is going to be great. They got the next Travis Kelce. It's going to be this explosion, and Stephon Diggs was still there and Gabe Davis. Then in the second round, they come back and they get a franchise offensive lineman. They go out and they draft Osiris Torrance. People are talking about him being the best guard in the draft. This year, you have Keon Coleman as the first pick, really sensible pick, somebody that I think fits culturally and stylistically into what the Bills want. But it's somebody that for every person out there like Ben Solak from The Ringer, Nate Tice from The Athletic that is singing the praises of Coleman, you have other folks that are kind of, and I don't have them their names specifically, that are kind of not as high on him and maybe had a lower second round grade or maybe even a third round grade on him, issues with the separation or lack thereof. There's more projection in a lot of these picks. Cole Bishop, I went back and listened to Nate Tice and Dane Brugler and Robert Mays on the draft show from day two. And when the pick was made for Cole Bishop, one of their biggest peeves with the pick was that they didn't see the fit in the Bills scheme because he played a lot of robber role at Utah, and the Bills are going to ask him to play in a quarters defense that maybe doesn't necessarily fit his skill set. But sometimes within the building, when you hear Brandon Bean talk about them, about these players, there's projection within the building based on their skill set. And I'm buying in on the Cole Bishop pick more than almost any other one because of how universally they were in support of this in the Bills draft room. Then you go to the third round pick, and man, that might be one of the steals of the draft with Dwayne Carter, a guy that comes in here ready-made for a day one role. And then you're right, it's just about filling needs up and down the board. I asked Brandon Bean, why not double dip? And he's like, listen, we considered wide receiver at a couple of different spots when our pick was coming up. We just had higher grades or higher needs at other positions.
And Brandon Bean always follows his board. We've learned this over the years. He's not going to select a position just to select a position. If things are close, that's a little bit different. But if he has a higher grade on one player over the other, he'll go with that one player. And, you know, you mentioned Cole Bishop. I am very high on Cole Bishop, the prospect. We'll see about the fit. But when it comes to, you know, members of the secondary, cornerback and safety, I feel like this team has overall done a great job of developing a lot of these players. Kyrie Elam maybe being the one exception right now. We'll see if he can bounce back this year with a new kind of defensive backs coach. But the Bills had one of the best in the business, and it just didn't click for him for whatever reason and early on in his tenure. But overall, they've had a lot of success at corner and obviously at safety with Poyer and Hyde and some of the depth pieces that they've had there. So if they're this high on Cole Bishop at safety, it tells me that they think he's going to fit in just fine, that they have an idea of what they want him to do as a rookie and what he can grow into that role. And Dwayne Carter immediately plugs into that defensive tackle rotation behind Ed Oliver, behind Daquan Jones. So on day two of the draft, they address a lot of needs. That they found a lot of good fits, in my opinion. I think that some fans today, though, were expecting maybe day three to go a little bit differently.
Yeah, and they wanted another wide receiver, but then you get to post-draft and you hear Brandon Bean talking about the roster, and he says, yeah, but, you know, we like our room. And then he mentions Tyrell Shavers, which, you know, I think that kind of caught some people by surprise. I saw Jeremy White from WGR kind of comment that on that on social media, and he said Shavers' name before he even mentioned Justin Shorter's, yeah. And it was almost like he threw Shorter's in as a little bit after the fact. And I think that they think that they have a lot of talent on the lower end with potential to offer something more. You know, they go out and they give a futures contract to KJ Hamler, former second round draft pick. If we went back to that draft, right, Ryan, and we took, and I know there's been injury issues, and listen, he may never get past that. He may never play in the league in the way that I think Denver thought he would work out when they drafted him. But if you take his draft stock from 4 years ago and you put it in this draft class, where would KJ Hamler kind of slot in here? You'd probably slot him in somewhere in the second, third round. And if you were getting that guy and you're a fan, you're like, I love the Bills wide receiver room. You got Keon Coleman, you got Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins, who I think, you know, people don't talk enough about Mac Hollins, and Brandon Bean has already made it a point to say he's paying dividends already. We're seeing his DNA injected into our wide receiver room in the offseason program.
For every prospect you love or hate after they're drafted, your opinion can do a complete 180 on them within a matter of a year or two. If there's injuries, if there's anything, if they don't produce as much as you expect, you know, you look at a KJ Hamler when he was drafted in Denver, high expectations, had some nice moments, but the injury bug bit him. You look at, you know, in Buffalo, there have been guys that have been taking these mid rounds where you say, oh, you know, do they really need that position? Do they really need a player of that or this player over this one? And then you go back and you look at a Terrell Bernard, for instance, who people criticized that pick at the time, and he was arguably their best player last year, besides anyone not named Josh Allen. So you can't sit here and judge right now in terms of this draft class. So people that you think you're sold on might not be the player that they end up you envisioned. The players that you're not as high on might end up being a pleasant surprise. So, you know, you're allowed to have a stance, but let's wait this thing out. Let's see what this class looks like. Even into their rookie year, how much are they contributing? If the majority or the vast majority of this draft class are not contributors, well, then, yeah, you can be a little bit more vocal about I was right. They didn't get the pieces that they needed. But I think there's a lot of overreactions in both areas right now in terms of those that might be a little bit too high on this class already and those that are bashing it. And I saw a comment that said, this is the draft class that's going to get Bean and McDermott fired. This is the worst draft class that they've ever had. Let's wait it out. Let's take a breather. Let's see how many of these guys are contributors in year one.
Comment on Facebook here, kind of passed through it. It's from Rance. Isn't Cameron Kinchins a better safety as far as covering a bit high for Bishop? Well, I guess it depends on what you're looking for. Like, I think that from an athletic testing perspective, Cole Bishop definitely is the more intriguing prospect. I think some of the numbers, he ran like a 4.4 at the combine. Some of his like advanced analytics in terms of play speed, some of the different things that he can do, I think he completely outshined Kinchins during the draft process. But the Miami product has the ball skills, the production, the instincts that I think, you know, Brandon Bean said is really important when you're talking about a safety. But for them to be this in on Bishop and having Kitchens cornerbacks coach or defensive backs coach from Miami a year ago in the building and still deciding to kind of go up for Bishop and being willing to trade up for Bishop, that's another revelation that we got in the when we talked to Bean last night, to me gives me, you know, just the confidence in. There's been so many times when people have questioned Bean's draft picks. I mean, I was at the front of the line holding the pitchfork on Terrell Bernard, and look, lo and behold, a year later, he turns into a, could you imagine this linebackers room right now had Tremaine Edmonds left and they had not drafted Terrell Bernard? It'd be in shambles. I mean, this, you have Matt Milano, but who's playing the mic? Are you having to you know, count on Dorian Williams to kind of take over that role this year. So there's a lot that goes into these draft picks. They spend months and months and months preparing for the draft. And I got the sense from Bean that even on day three, the seven guys that they got, they were really excited about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cole Bishop, back to that safety talk real quick. More versatility in terms of how you can use him over Kitchens. And you mentioned it, you know, the Bills tried to trade up for Cole Bishop. There were no takers there. They were very happy to get him. I think Kitchens would have been a fine consolation prize had they lost out on Bishop and then were able to grab him a little bit later in this draft. I do want to address a comment here, though, Matt, from I'm Sabbath, someone that I definitely see on social media a lot on Twitter, too. He goes, I don't know if you guys can see this chat or not. It isn't about whether the players they picked. So I should probably put it up on the
are bad or not.
Yeah, there we go. Are bad or not. It's about them drafting a project at wide receiver, then completely ignoring the position in a year that they're supposed to be contenders. Whether Carter or Ray Davis is good or not is irrelevant. One, I think trading down was the right option on day one to get those picks, to get that third round pick that they thought they were going to get in the Tremaine Edmonds compensatory deal. They weren't sold on Worthy. They weren't sold on Leggett. So if you fast forward to round, you know, or day two of this draft, after they take Keon Coleman, I'm just not sure what they were supposed to do, reach a few rounds higher for a Javon Baker or a Troy Franklin. You can always look back and say they should have done something, but the way the draft board fell this year, some prospects that people thought were going to go a lot higher than they were going to, it just never happened. To Brendan Rice, who some mock drafts had as a day two pick, you know, went into round seven, Matt, or went pretty deep into this draft class. So you don't just want to pick a position just to pick one. They're not ignoring it. They brought in a street free agent today. Brandon Bean said that they're going to sign. There are other free agent options out there that can be quality contributors. I know he said they're not going to make a big splash move at the position, but come June 1st, they at least have a little bit of more cap space to deal with, although a chunk of that money will go to the rookie class and UDFAs. You don't want to reach on some of these players just to appease the fan base. These guys do a lot of due diligence on every position, and they went into this, they attacked what they thought they needed to do. They feel pretty good about the players that they added.
And I don't think you should discount the fact that, you know, they have two day three picks on their roster already that have already been in the system in Shorter and Shakir. So I think that if you were going in today saying wide receiver or bust, well, they do have two guys that they've already spent assets on. They brought in two free agents, whatever you believe in those guys. And then they went out and they used their first pick, you know, basically like a borderline first on a guy that they think can be definitely their X receiver, their bona fide boundary, but potentially with wide receiver one upside. And I keep coming back to this, and a lot of people push back on me about this. People on the beat, like some of my colleagues, people are sleeping on Dalton Kincaid. Like I when they drafted him, when they spent that valuable asset, which they gave up an asset to go up and get a guy, they spent a first round pick on a tight end. You do that because you think the guy is going to be a difference maker in your offense. He set the franchise record, not only for rookie tight ends in his first season. Any tight end that's ever played in the Buffalo Bills organization, Dalton Kincaid's the best. He's better than all of them. Now, it's not a great list, of course. Like that's got to be, you know, mentioned. But what's the position, Ryan? If you were power ranking positions when it comes to taking a jump from rookie season to sophomore season, where do we see the biggest jumps for players? Where would you say a position? Throw it out there.
You know, I think obviously tight end is going to be high up there, Matt, because usually it's a slow developing position. It takes some time, and he exceeded expectations. There were a few tight ends last year in that rookie class that exceeded expectations. So I expect there to be that jump from year one to year two. You're going to see more targets. You're going to see more production there. He's going to be a big focal point of this offense. Other part I'll throw out to that is I think that they want to utilize two tight end sets, but you know, Dawson Knox was banged up at times last year, didn't have the best season. So you still have him waiting the wings. He has proven that he can be an asset to this team. Curtis Samuel, who we've mentioned over and over again in terms of, you know, a 90 to 100 target type of guy on this offense. And the list goes on. Khalil Shakir continuing to ascend as a player as well. So they have a lot of guys already that are going to get targets. You mentioned Mac Hollins, who always does seem to get overlooked in these conversations, was a productive receiver, especially a few years ago with the Raiders, has shown that he can help in that regard. I'm not sitting here saying any of those free agent additions or these the day three Justin Shorter types or anything like that are going to come onto the scene and be these massive producers, but they're going to get some targets. They're going to produce. They're going to help this offense to a certain extent. And the team is still signing a street free agent here in the near future, and I'm sure they'll continue to evaluate the roster. I guess I'm just sitting in this mode of there's no reason to panic right now on, you know, late April when the season doesn't begin until September.
And I think if you put yourself in the spot about thinking about what if Keon Coleman is one of the dudes from this draft, you're going to be sitting there in 6 months when the Bills roll the ball out, being grateful that that's the guy that you ended up with. And I know people wanted Leggett. I know people wanted Worthy. I'm not sold on Worthy, man. Like the more and more I think about his potential, if you were asking him, if you took Worthy at 28, and you like stiff armed the Chiefs and that narrative came out, the expectations on that player in year one are something that I just don't think he's going to live up to. Did he land in a good spot? Yes. I think that if Rashee Rice is there, if Travis Kelce is there and he can be the third option in that offense, he becomes a real weapon for them. And, you know, that's something that you're going to risk. But I think what if everybody wants to play the what if game, Ryan, with this. And let me just throw another alternative what if to you. What if Xavier Worthy catches a big touchdown pass in a game against the Bills in the playoffs, right? A quarter later, the Bills up, let's say, a field goal. Dwayne Carter sacks Patrick Mahomes on 4th and 15 to end the game. And now you're sitting there saying, oh my gosh, Xavier Worthy scored that touchdown in the first half. But the guy that we got in the trade for Worthy, Dwayne Carter, makes a play to win the game. I'm just throwing out a hypothetical there. Like, people don't play it out that way. They go to like the worst case scenario. So I just think that there's other alternatives, and I get it. Like, being a Bills fan is like, it's just built in for so many people. I have them in my family. I have them in my group chats. Like the just pessimism that just runs rampant. I get it, but there's hope too. I mean, just think about it. Sitting in your living room, watching the Bills, watching the draft in 2016, could you have imagined a run like this when Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott got here? Are they closer to winning a Super Bowl than they were last year? Probably not, but you have to know when what you were doing wasn't getting the job done, resetting on the fly, potentially having a little bit of addition by subtraction when it comes to Stephon Diggs, and we could kind of talk about that a little bit. And somebody asked here, Matt, are you implying the Bills fans are negative? No, I'm implying that there's like pessimism baked into for a fan base that has struggled through absolute heartbreak for decades. And that's okay. But there are other alternatives and potential outcomes to all of these kind of picks. And you know, in a minute here, we're going to give our grades. And I want to get into some of these players the Bills got and what that looks like for certain position rooms. But I do feel like there's just so much like expecting the worst. Because I guess like there's been a lot of bad over the course of the Bills history.
Right. And you know, you didn't say it, but I'll say it. Every fan base has negative fans. I mean, that's not the vast majority of Bills fans, but to answer that, the fans question in the chat. Yeah, there's definitely some fans that always look to the negative first, no matter the fan base. But in terms of pessimism, yeah, the Chiefs have had the Bills number in the playoffs. The Chiefs have won the Super Bowl. They traded with the Chiefs again. It's this wide receiver that has this blazing speed. It's a great situation. It's a great head coach there. It's a great quarterback. So it might end up being a key contributor, a really good player for this team. But man, I already laid out all the speedy receivers in the last decade and how the vast majority have not been factors for the most part in this league more times than not. We've already talked about the fact that there's a reason that Worthy was available at the end of round one and was not taken in that first clump of receivers. There's issues with his game. There's areas that he needs to work on, just like Keon Coleman has things to work on, just like a lot of these guys taken early on day three. there were no perfect prospects whatsoever in this draft. But once you got past those first three, there was a sizable gap there with Brian Thomas being in that next tier. And then a pretty big gap where you had the Keon Coleman's and the Xavier Worthy's. So just because one guy has more speed than the other, let's kind of still wait it out and see, because both wide receivers in this case ended up in great situations. Josh Allen wanted Keon Coleman by everything that we've been told thus far. And I'm sure the Bills have a plan in place for Coleman too.
All right, so let's do this. I have a couple of prompts that I'm going to give the both of us, and we'll give our reactions, our answers. I want the grade for the draft class, and let me run it through here. Keon Coleman, Cole Bishop, Dewayne Carter on day two. Day three today, running back out of Kentucky, Ray Davis. Such a fun story. We'll get into that in a minute. In the fifth round, the Bills went and got their potential center of the future, Cedric Van Pran Granger from Georgia, two national championships. I can't say that. Okay, my wife just texted me stuff. Okay, next pick out of Washington. Stop texting me. Eddie Ulofosio, Bishop Gorman product. I lived in Vegas for 4 years. That was kind of cool. And I forgot, for some reason, I thought Dalton Kincaid went to Bishop Gorman. He went to Faith Lutheran. So that was a goofy question that I asked to him. I have one every few. Troy edge rusher, Javon Solomon. I think that was the sixth round, right? That's where the sixth round started.
Yes. No, fifth. He was still
fifth. He was the last fifth. Then two in the sixth, tackle out of UCF, Tylan Grable, Penn State cornerback, slot corner, but punt return savant, Daquan Hardy. And then in the final round, the seventh round, Travis Clayton, offensive tackle. He is the international pathway program player out of the UK. And interesting, like, the Bills absolutely loved his workout so much. Bean wanted to use a draft pick, so he didn't risk not being able to sign him. And international pathway players are great because they don't count against your 90-man roster. If this guy ends up being a freak and a potential guy that you want to get in your 53-man roster, you can develop him over the next year or two, and it's not going to cost against your roster. Your first impressions.
First impressions, you know, I there are some players I like more than others. I think you're going to have that with any draft class. On day three, Cedric Van Pran Granger, huge fan of that pick. I think the only reason he wasn't taken higher is the arm length was the one area where he didn't test well, quote unquote. But this is someone that played at a high level at Georgia, someone that I think that if this move to center doesn't work for the Bills in terms of the realignment here that they're going to try out, he could end up being the heir apparent at center for quite some time. I like everything about his game. I like the power. Ray Davis, great story. In foster care for about 8 years. Inspirational story. I have some issues with the age, 23 years old, a little bit older, but my stance is, usually I don't want to give a running back a second contract anyway, so it's not a huge deal. At the end of the day, I liked those two picks. The linebacker, I think he's more of a special teamer. He did test well athletically. I've talked on here about how on day three, I know that some picks will be for special teams, but I would like them to kind of also try to go for talent over special teams at times, like roll the dice on a player that you think could be a contributor. And maybe he proves me wrong, but he was just kind of more of a core special teamer, in my opinion. And then I will skip around here a little bit. I like Solomon a lot, but I really liked the two offensive line prospects at the end of the draft. You already mentioned when it came to Clayton, the extra roster spot on the practice squad doesn't count against the 90-man roster. There were some questions about whether or not he even has to clear waivers when it comes down to cut down time. And the Bills might just be able to stash him right away, develop him. He tested so well at that 20-minute workout, looked the part, ran a freakishly fast 40 time. So I love that pick to kind of end it. A lot of interesting sports backgrounds. And then Tylan Grable. He might be my second favorite pick of day three behind the Georgia center, because he's a player that he's exactly what you want to look for. The upside is there, the development. I think that you could get a really good player a really good offensive lineman. He was a quarterback in high school, shifted over to tight end, played offensive line. He's only played O-line for 4 years, but he did well enough at O-line that he got drafted in this year's draft class. So upside through the roof there. With Aaron Cromer as your offensive line coach, the development that he's had with Ryan Vandermark, Alec Anderson, really high in those picks. And if I had to throw a grade on this overall draft, I'd probably stick with the same grade I gave the Keon Coleman pick, about, you know, a B minus. Nothing flashy, but you addressed a lot of positional needs.
So, funny enough, I actually think the linebacker was my favorite pick. And I'm only going to say that because the center would have been it, but you kind of said that that was your favorite one as well. I think that that's a guy that could come in and if he blows your doors off, I mean, maybe that's a situation where they move back McGovern to left guard and say, okay, right, let's just put him in there now. Although I think for this year, you could slow play him, let McGovern play center. You know, if you're not comfortable in giving him the reins right away, you're going to need a backup center. Right. Like right now you're looking at the roster. You don't have anybody. He mentioned Will Clapp. I'm not on the Will Clapp fan train. I don't think that he's Greg Mance. I don't think he's going to make the 53 man roster. We'll see. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. He started some games in this league, but he's been on really bad teams. He's been really, and the Bills have done this. They've done this with these players year in and year out. I mean, how many can I name to you? What was the guy? A couple name, Forrest Lamp. Was that his name a couple years ago?
Yeah.
You had him. You had Greg Mance. You had Greg Van Roten. You had Winter from the Jets. I mean, there's just been this long string of these like third wave offensive linemen. It's not like other position groups. Like if you're out there and you're an offensive lineman, it doesn't get you excited. So I think if you kind of put him in day one as your backup center, and listen, he might have to develop from a mental perspective, how complicated the Bills offense is. And maybe you wouldn't trust him if your center goes out, and that could be a consideration, probably why they want to try to cross train him at other positions. I like the pick. What I like about the linebacker is, first of all, I think the Bills with, you know, Babich, with Sean McDermott, especially whoever else they have. And this would be a good question for Brandon Bean. They have a really good ability to find talent on late day two, day three at that position. And really, even if you want to count Tyrell Dotson at UDFA, I think you place your trust in them to find the right player. Sure, is it going to be special teams early? Definitely. They're probably going to play Mike linebacker at Washington. He's probably not going to play Mike in the NFL. Like, they're probably going to put him more in an outside linebacker position, but he's super fast. He only has one speed. He plays downhill. To me, that's the kind of thing that they look to add to their defense. And Ryan, look right now, Tyler Medicavich is gone. AJ Klein is gone. Tyrell Dotson is gone. They bring in Nicholas Morrow, which is a nice veteran, cheap free agent addition. But beyond that, they have work to do. Like, have they added a UDFA linebacker yet? Because I think they might need to add two.
Let me look at my list so far. So they have cornerback, running back, wide receiver, guard, O-lineman, punter, wide receiver, tackle. No linebackers yet.
I'm very interested to see if they go out and take a linebacker. I echo all your points on the tackles. I think that, you know, the tackle, outside of the fact that he played quarterback, like the inexperience, the size, the athletic profile that he brings reminds you of Spencer Brown. And I think that, you know, you continue to take late swings like Tommy Doyle. I think he's going to come back. He's going to get to training camp. We'll see where he's at. But obviously a guy that's been injured pretty seriously twice in his very young career. You start kind of bringing in, you know, those guys that are super tall, super athletic, see what it looks like. I also really like the Penn State corner. It's complicated because the roster spot might be tough to give him unless he almost beats out Cam Lewis, maybe, who is that kind of like hybrid safety backup nickel cornerback. Because if he makes the team, it's going to be primarily for punt returns. He had two punt returns for a touchdown against Massachusetts. He is absolutely electric in that part of the game. He's also super feisty. I think somebody shared his game tape from a matchup against a Power Five school, and he had like
Ohio State. Yeah, Carl. Carl shared that, I believe.
Our guy, Carl Jones. Dude, yeah. Carl Jones, if you want to talk about a riser, That dude is as talented as anybody doing it right now. I love following all his stuff. He's great with his time whenever he jumps on the show. So I really like that pick too, because you're going to need somebody to return kicks. And right now you look on the roster, I mean, maybe KJ Hamler, he didn't do it a ton. Ty Johnson is there. He returned kicks. I know they did Shakir at punt return. They don't have a lot of guys right now that are in the mix or in the competition for that.
No. And with, you know, with this new kickoff rule though, too, that they're planning on implementing, I think that there could just be a few guys that we aren't even expecting trying it out, because it's a different element where if it goes according to plan, I think they're going to try it in preseason and they still have to approve it from there. I'm not 100% sure on that, but if it does get implemented fully, you know, no one moves until the kicker has the ball in their hands, and that might change the way that you think about it in terms of who you want back there and who you think would be your best options. But yeah, he does bring that element in terms of the return game. I liked the skill set, but you're right. I mean, kind of that slot nickel cornerback type of role where the Bills already have a great one there, but depth is depth and you need it at all positions.
Thank you so much to the roughly 2,000 people that are watching live right now across all three platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, almost 500, Ryan. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel as well. We really appreciate it. We have been absolutely hammering the insider text line. I wonder if anybody's like, all right, dude, like chill with all these texts. Right. I was sending out a bunch of them this morning. I don't think so. We haven't gotten any of those texts back. If you want to become an insider, you could do it right now by texting 716-528-6727. What you do is you just send a text, say hi, say want to join, whatever you want to, just type a letter, it doesn't matter. You'll get a text back with details on how to subscribe, and what you do is you get a 2-week free trial. It's $3.99 a month. After that, cancel anytime. If the text doesn't work for some reason, go to joinsubtext.com/shoutbuffalobills, put in your phone number and it'll give you details. Walk you through it from there. The Shout Text Line is brought to you by our guy, Kerry C. Beyer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, just give him a call, 716-852-1234. He'll work you through all of your options. Tell him the Shout Boy sent you, or head over to and check it out at litrolaw.com. All right, Ryan, so I'm going to give you a couple prompts. Who was the player that was picked at any point where you were like, I would have gone with somebody else in this spot or taken a different approach to the pick? So I bring this up because I'm like, would you have rather, instead of sitting and picking Ray Davis, would you have maybe packaged two fives and that pick to go up and try to get Troy Franklin at the beginning of the fourth round? I think that's all, you know, worth talking about, because he's somebody that we talk so much about during the draft process. I will push back a little bit if that is the move that you want to do, only because it seems like a lot of teams really cooled on him.
So it probably would have been Javon Baker, and the Bills, to your credit, didn't seem to do a lot of homework on Javon Baker, but he was a wide receiver I was really high on that I was hoping the Bills would move up for on day three of the draft to kind of go and get. So that'd be one scenario. I love the story with Ray Davis. I think he adds more to Buffalo's offense than an Audric Estime would have, who I was also very high on, but Estime went a little bit further down in the draft, and maybe they could have used that pick to address wide receiver by trading up late in the draft. And I mean, this is just kind of it's not even a great argument. I thought MJ Devonshire was going to be a pick by this draft, by this regime. They met with him at the combine. They brought him in. And I don't know if his visit necessarily counted as a 30 visit, because it's Pitt's kind of a close school and there are certain schools that count as local visits. So I thought that maybe he would have brought more to the room, or that maybe they had more interest there than what Hardy would have been for the cornerback out of Penn State. But those are the two that I have on my mind just looking at this. I can't remember who else was on the board when they took the linebacker at 160, but there were a few players that I saw fans clamoring for an edge rusher, and he was taken shortly thereafter, or I want to say in that range. So
I think if I went Oh no, go ahead.
No, so I'm just saying, like, if I had the pick by pick in front of me right now,
I have that's what I'll I'm do. Pull it up right now.
Yeah.
If so you Austin that, Booker that ended up going in the fifth round, and mm-hmm. he's somebody that I had on a mock draft. He went four picks after the center. I wouldn't have taken Booker over the center. Now, knowing like everything we talked about leading up to the draft, the intel that they probably had on him because of McDermott's relationship with Lance Leipold, if he didn't pull the trigger on him in the fourth round, you know, and then obviously with that first pick, or maybe even wanting to trade up, maybe you take the center at 141 and then you get to 142 and you say, all right, we're going to package a couple of these picks. We're going to go up. Maybe go and get him there. There's got to be a reason they didn't go in that direction. I'm looking to see if there's anybody else that we talk about. So Brennan Jackson, the edge rusher, went to the Rams five picks before they took Eddie Ulofosio, the linebacker out of Washington. So maybe that's an area. Like, I think Brennan Jackson was one of Mel Kiper's like guys, that day three guys that he thinks are super sleepers. He's somebody that I think I might have had in a mock as well at some point. I had so many mocks. I had so many mocks that never saw the light of day at this point that I'm just kind of like going through in my head. We're going to get to the super chat in a minute, Carl. But yeah, those were some of the guys that were sitting there.
Yeah, I'm looking through here to try to remember who it was that I saw people kind of clamoring for. It might have actually been in round six that the player went off the board. I did like where Quantez Stiggers went at 176. Yeah. He could have been one that you could have convinced me on. CFL Rookie of the Year, really good story. Bills brought him in on a 30 visit. So that maybe that one.
I think Stiggers over the linebacker, even though I said he was my favorite pick. Maybe you could take Stiggers there and maybe get but the fact that they only took Hardy, who's primarily a slot corner, and obviously they just re-signed Taron Johnson to an extension, made him the highest paid slot corner. Mm-hmm. They're really happy with their depth at boundary corner. Like, not only Kyer Elam, who's that top depth player, but Jamarcus Ingram, who I think continues to be a guy that they're super high on. The Bills always find a UDFA, a cornerback that they can kind of throw into the mix that they end up really liking. So I think it just came down to there wasn't necessarily a need, and who knows, maybe they end up adding a veteran at some point over the next couple of weeks. I don't know who's out there right now, but maybe somebody that's, you know, been in the mix for them before.
And the last thing on Hardy that I'll say is he was coached by Manny Diaz, and Manny Diaz and Sean McDermott kind of had this little pipeline of players that the Bills regime have taken over the years. So I'm sure Diaz spoke pretty highly of Hardy, and that was another factor in the Bills taking him late on day three in this draft class. That goes a long way where you have those coaching relationships, and they can kind of give you some prospects to target and when to target them.
So the Bills right now, Kyren Brown is the other boundary corner that's on the roster. So honestly, really not a ton. I'm surprised they didn't just throw one dart to your point, Devin Shire. If it's somebody they really like, there's probably somebody that's going to have to be in the mix here. And I'm bringing up cornerback over on SpotTrack. See if we could take a quick look at who's available. Did you say one cornerback UDFA so far?
Let me go back to my list here.
Yeah, who's that one? And then also tell us a little bit, while I'm looking this up, tell us a little bit about the Ohio State wide receiver, if you know anything about him.
Yeah, so first of all, the cornerback is from Western Michigan, Kenny H. Lovely. I didn't know a lot about him. I saw Western Michigan, though, shared it. He was listed as a priority free agent on Dane Brugler's The Beast. So someone that, didn't go drafted, but Brugler thought enough of to be one of those priority undrafted free agent signings. So that there might be some upside to his game. Xavier Johnson Jr. is interesting, the Ohio State wide receiver. He kind of was a walk-on, went under scholarship, I think it was two seasons ago, just kind of buried on that depth chart with all the talent that they had. I think he also had a little bit of an injury history there. I've seen some bold proclamations on social media about this is a guy that will make the roster, which I can't go that far, but maybe a shot to stick on the practice squad. An interesting, talent level to be able to stick around on that Ohio State roster and make some plays from time to time for that team. Frank Gore Jr., the running back from Southern Miss, is the biggest name thus far. Obviously, Dad was here 5 years ago with the Bills and went undrafted, but has a lot of the similar pedigree. And after Gore, Gore is the big name, but Keaton Bills, which, you know, a perfect last name for a player joining this roster from Utah, is another one of the UDFAs that I really like for this team. Another Utah player. The Bills are kind of picking all the Utah players up here in the last 2 years, but quality guard. Wouldn't surprise me if he's in the mix come training camp for one of the last O-line spots, or if he is someone that they really try to get onto their practice squad as soon as roster cuts occur.
Yeah, a ton of boundary cornerbacks available even still. I mean, Xavier Howard's the high end of things, J.C. Jackson, but then you get into the Adoree Jackson, Cam Sutton, Stephon Gilmore, Patrick Peterson. Steven Nelson's a guy at 32 years old, could potentially be somebody that I've thought for plenty of free agent cycles made a lot of sense for the Bills and kind of what he does well. Maybe come in here, sell him on being that third cornerback, the first guy up, kind of take it easy until maybe there's an injury, depending on how that whole situation takes place. And then, hey, I wouldn't even rule them out bringing back Josh Norman. They never feel like they're in a bad spot when they bring him in. So still some options there at boundary corner. Let's get this super chat. Carl Tommen, one of our regulars in the super chat. How do you rate the Bills wide receiver room after the draft of Keon Coleman with Justin Shorter, Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins, and somebody we haven't mentioned yet, Andy Isabella?
Well, I mean, if we're comparing it to last year, I can't sit here and say it's better than last year's on paper. We need to wait and see how they get schemed up, how they're utilized, and how, you know, and things of that nature. But you traded away Stephon Diggs, who's been your number one wide receiver. You lost Gabe Davis in free agency. And, you know, there were some frustrating stretches with Gabe Davis where he'd be kept off the box score altogether. And then he'd have these games where he'd catch three passes for 106 yards or four or five passes for 75, 80 yards and a score. And, you know, he was still a solid guy. I don't think that they have that same talent level right now, but this might be an offense that does kind of funnel thing through the tight end position more with Kincaid and Knox. And you have a pass catching back in James Cook. You've bolstered this offensive line in free agency, in the draft, even with some of these UDFAs, I think could stick around. And if that line gives Josh Allen time to look down the field, these guys can get open. They can be contributors. They can help out here and be factors to this offense. But just on paper alone, it doesn't look as good as last year's roster, in my opinion. What do you think?
No, I mean, for all the flack that Gabe Davis took during his time, you know, he was a very productive day three wide receiver for them. I mean, he earned quite a big contract in the open market, and, you know, Stephon Diggs set records for this organization. So there's definitely going to be like a reimagining of what this looks like, but I don't necessarily operate out of the space that just because something's different and there's so much of like unknown that it's gotta be like worse, right? Like, I think that there's a lot of different ways this could be a better and more efficient offense in the passing game. You know, without Stephon Diggs' mountain of targets, now you can kind of really try to think about how do we get James Cook more involved if you're the Bills? How do you get Dalton Kincaid more involved if you're the Bills? How do you get Khalil Shakir more involved? I still can't believe, going back to last season, that he only had 45 targets or whatever it ended up being at the end of the season. I mean, or maybe he had 60 targets and 45 catches, whatever it ended up being. I think it needs to be more. And so is the wide receiver room something that is, you know, teams are coming in saying, man, how are we going to deal with all these great wide receivers for the Bills? I don't think you're there yet, but how many teams have a fearful wide receiver room in the NFL, Ryan? I think you could say the 49ers, they're a Super Bowl contender. That's definitely one that I would name. Beyond that, in terms of, like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys have some really good wide receivers. You know, CeeDee Lamb's the best, one of the best two or three in the league. I'm not worried about the Cowboys offense. Like, I'm not going into that game saying like, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm going to slow them down or I'm going to stop them. Even the Miami Dolphins, you have Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. I mean, the Bills handled them multiple times over the last couple of seasons. So listen, it comes down to Josh.
Bengals, too.
Bengals, of course. Bengals, yeah. Bengals. Texans. I'm not going to put the Chiefs in there. I don't think the Chiefs wide receiving group is actually all that special at all.
No. Mahomes elevates.
Those other two, Bengals and Texans, yeah, for sure. And now that Joe Burrow is going to be back, the Bengals are a problem. They had Jermaine Burton, low-key, sneaky, could be an interesting number three wide receiver. We'll see what that looks like. But anyway, we'll see, man. Like, there's just so much projection here, and I like the possibilities of what this could look like without a target monster in the mix. And sorry if that sounds derogatory to sort of digs. I mean somebody that's just going to take a lion's share of the targets.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with what you just said there, because when you do have someone that is a number one wide receiver, they do get a lion's share of targets. And it's not a bad thing necessarily, but it also allows defenses to kind of game plan for you and try to figure out ways to take that player out and how to make you more one-dimensional. So while the Bills don't have that right now, it's going to be maybe a little bit more frustrating or challenging for defenses to say, well, do we throw our top corner on this player or this player? Kincaid's been the guy maybe that's been the main factor for the Bills in 2024. What can we do to take him out? So it's going to cause a lot of issues with this offense. And by the way, if the Bills start out as strong as I think they're going to, it's going to take some time for opposing defenses to catch up in terms of the film on Joe Brady's offense. Yes, you can go back to the Carolina tape from a few years ago, but that's Teddy Bridgewater. That's a lot of different players with a lot of different skill sets. And when you have Josh Allen and what I think that Joe Brady is going to be able to scheme up here, I think that they can kind of get off and running here early on and then continue to build upon that.
All right, final little segment here, 30 to 45 seconds. I will start. Grade the Buffalo Bills overall draft class. Any final thoughts on it? And then we'll end this one. We're almost at an hour. I said we'd go 30 minutes. all right, so I'm going to give the Bills a B. My first grade was going to be a B-, but I ticked it up a little bit because I think adding that fourth round pick next year in that kind of meaningless, forgettable late day three trade with those multiple fifths. Brilliant. I would have done it one more time. I would have sent another fifth to see if you can get another fourth, but whatever. They got some comp picks that they're expecting to come back next year. It's not just about this year. I think it's about the health of your roster, getting younger, you know, continuing to add new pieces year after year. And their position right now next year with two twos and a one, depending on how they finish, to get really aggressive and all that day three capital to potentially get up in that draft. And maybe finally they do get the third round comp pick, you know, with Leonard Floyd going and signing and Gabe Davis going and signing. We'll see how it all kind of, you know, fits together. I've gotten to a point where I'm really, really intrigued with Keon Coleman. And of course it's easy to say, like, he wowed us at the press conference today. He seems super engaging. He's prioritizing his relationship with Josh Allen. I've listed out all the things that I like potentially about his game and how it fits in. But I think personality wise, like, the guy fits into what I think they want their offense to be. I think he's got some alpha male number one traits. Can it live up to that? We will find out. I like the class overall, a lot of really good fits, potential developmental players. And that's what you're trying to do when you're picking at the back half of every round. Final grade B for me.
Yeah. Final grade for me is a B-. I like the picks. I like the fits, character players, pretty much from start to finish for this team. A lot of former team captains, that they drafted, and they added a developmental edge that, doesn't fit what they usually look for in terms of the height and weight. And that actually has me oddly optimistic, Matt, because, you know, for years it was trying to get AJ Epenesa, in messing with his weight a little bit and getting him to a certain size and Boogie Basham. And they had this prototype of what an edge rusher should be. And, you know, Jevon Solomon Javon Solomon is someone that's a little bit smaller. And yes, he played at Troy. It's a smaller program, but he thrived there. He has a pretty good pass rush. He's going to learn from Von Miller, a player that he says he models his game after. So I'm excited from that perspective. I love the, I saw that our friend Bundy in the chat said he hated the trade of the fifth for a fourth. That was actually one of my favorite moments. One, it was one less player that we had to write a bunch of stories about. But two, no, honestly, I mean, getting a fourth round pick in next year's draft is big because of all the reasons you already mentioned. If you're going to trade up and try to get a big player, you have a one, two twos, three, possibly some compensatory picks, a few fours. They're going to be in business next year. They're going to be healthier cap wise. And, you know, I don't want to fast forward through 2024, but I liked that trade as well. They addressed a lot of the needs they needed to address. It's not flashy. So I think a B minus is pretty fair.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of Shout. Hit that like and subscribe before you go on YouTube. Thank you for watching on X, on Facebook, wherever you get the podcast. If you listen to us on audio, make sure you download, subscribe, leave a review there as well. May 17th, we're back at Wingnuts. It'll be right after the rookie mini camp, our first look at Keon Coleman. That's going to be a fun one to come out there. I'll give you all of my insights, everything that you don't even get on the podcast. If you got a question that you want to ask me about mini camp, talk Bills with me and Ryan. We will be out there. We're going to have a fun time. May 17th, Wingnuts, 1402 Millersport Highway. He's Ryan. I'm Matt. We will see you next week, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care.